everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm Jace.
I'm Manny.
And this episode is episode 209, New Comics Wednesday for January 17th. So we're going to be talking about some comics that come out this coming Wednesday, or actually as you hear this, they're coming out today. So before you head down to the comic shop, you'll be able to listen and have an idea of some of the books that we're looking at. And unfortunately, you know, as I talked about on last week's New Comics Wednesday, you know, we're not big enough or not important enough to Marvel, apparently, to get preview copies from them, because there's a few Marvel books that I would like to take a look at and let you know my thoughts and whether I can recommend them or not. But unfortunately, you know, that's the situation. Also, it was a very light week for Image, so nothing stood out there for me. And Valiant didn't have any books this week. And that kind of left DC. So it's going to be very DC heavy. But before we talk about the three DC books that we're going to discuss, I will mention that from Aftershock, we have Brilliant Trash number 3 from writer Tim Seeley. Art by Priscilla Prietis, I think is how you pronounce her name. And colors are by Marco Lesko. So on this last Monday's episode of Aftershock Monday, I had an interview with Tim Seeley where we talked about the book. And we talked about the series overall, I should say, not just issue 3. But the reason I wanted to mention it on this podcast was just based on the strength of this issue. I feel like the first two issues, the story was first issue was kind of set up. Second issue was started to make a little more sense, but still the story was trying to find its footing. And now I feel like with this issue 3, like everything's clicked into place, story makes sense, can kind of get an idea of what's going on, kind of see where the story's heading, and we're starting to see a big change in one of our main characters, and it just kind of set it up to show that we're really going to see some growth from her as a person. So I think it's a really, really great book. It's science fiction. It's about people in this universe and this world that Tim Seeley has created that undergo these experiments to gain the superpowers. But every time they use them, they're taking years off their life. So it's that whole idea of sacrifice. Like, what would you be willing to do to have these powers? You know, and knowing every time you use them, you're shortening your life. And the world he's created is it's very interesting, the role that social media plays in this world and politics. You know, the issue 1 starts off with this person that's gained these powers destroying Jerusalem, basically saying, look at this city and this place that's the cause of all this strife and the focus of all this violence, fighting over it. I'm just going to take it off the game board. And it goes from there. So it's a really great book. It's from Aftershock Comics, who's a really amazing publisher. They're putting out some of the best comics that are coming out on the market these days, and I feel like they're kind of flying under the radar. So it's part of the reason we're doing the Aftershock Mondays, to kind of get the word out and let people know that if it says Aftershock Comics on the cover, it's worth a look, because it's really great creators like Tim Seeley and Jimmy Palmiotti, Amanda Connor, Garth Ennis, Paul Jenkins, Neil Gaiman's going to be doing something for them, Bill Willingham. I mean, these are, you know, legendary comic creators. So do yourself a favor and go check out Brilliant Trash number 3. Next book we're going to talk about is Batman number 39, written by Tom King, art by Joelle Jones, and colors by the incomparable Jordi Belair. Batman 39, Manny, go. What are your thoughts?
Oh, man. This book took a turn that I was not expecting, and I'm not really sure I'm really happy with. Don't really want to talk much about it, just because it kind of develops that way, and I want to necessarily spoil the entire issue. But what I will say about the issue is that the artwork by Joelle Jones is awesome. The page with Wonder Woman as she's waiting for Batman with the bat signal, I loved it. I think that she does a phenomenal job on the issue. I don't know. They've just, you know, with the previous few issues, with the whole Super Friends thing and kind of, this one took a little bit of a turn, and then at the end of it, I was like, oh, you guys are going to go that route, huh? And it bugged me a lot more than I thought it would. And, I wanted to get your thoughts on it.
Well, first of all, apparently there was a Superman Wonder Woman story back in the early 2000s that was basically the same story. Like,
oh, really?
Yeah. Like, 1,000 years is like the time frame. And they're there, and you know, what are you going to do? Right. And so it's interesting because I'm kind of torn with the situation that Batman and Wonder Woman find themselves in. Because I mean, 10 years, right? I mean, what do you, and you think that's always going to be the situation you're in? I can't really fault them for making this, you know. And we don't know that they're making one choice or another. It's kind of left on a cliffhanger ending. But regardless of which way they go, I feel like I can't really judge because I'm trying to put myself in that situation and be like, man, 10 years and you think that's always going to be the way things are. Like, you know, like, why not? Right? But yeah, I agree with you. I got to that last page and I was like, oh, ooh, not good. You know, I mean, that was my initial reaction.
Because we spent the previous issues, you know, you should call Superman. And Superman's like, you should call Batman, you know, with Lois and with Selina. They're going back and forth. And you know, this whole drama between them about, you know, their egos and stuff. And then you spent the next issue at the fair and everything and, you know, just kind of patching things up or whatever. And then, I mean, this just kind of like just flips the script completely, and it kind of makes it like all for none. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I just feel like too soon, like way too soon, because we just got out of the desert a little while ago, with Talia and everything, and for the whole the War of Jokes and Riddles, that was also. I mean, all this has been completely setting up this relationship, and then for it to just like turn heel this fast, it bugged me.
Okay, first of all, we don't know that anything has happened. Second of all, you are allowing Tom to play you. This is exactly you're reacting exactly as he wants, man. You're a little chess piece, and he's moving you around the board. You give him too much credit, man. Like, don't let Tom don't go out like that with Tom, man. He loves to do this kind of stuff. I guarantee this is all on purpose, man. He's that up there in your head. And that's why I'm like, nothing's happened yet. I'm not going to, you know, be upset. I had that first initial reaction, like just, oh, kind of thing. Kind of like, you know, we just had Christmas, that moment when Ralphie blurts out to his mom that he wants the BB gun and realizes it's a mistake. And he says, oh, that was my reaction when I saw the last page.
Oh, okay.
But I'm telling you, man,
Tom, I get it. I'm being played, but
flipped the script. What about the rest of the story though? We focused on this one aspect of it. Love the idea that time passes differently between the two. Love the fact that the other guy's only been gone like a year. And he gets to go call his wife and everything. And he's hanging out with Selina. Like, yeah, all that. I liked the opening sequence with the bat signal. I thought that was enjoyable too. So all in all, for me, I think a really great, great issue. Even if Tom is playing with our emotions a little bit.
Yeah. Well, the rest of it, I don't know. I just feel like it's almost like a fill-in issue. I don't really see it having that much, that much of an effect on the overall story. Just that small tidbit at the end. I just don't see it having that much of an effect on the Bat universe per se. So it was okay. I really enjoyed the art more than anything else.
It's Tom King. There are no fill-in issues. Everything is purposeful.
I know. But yeah,
he'll pull some obscure something else. I mean, people would have said the same thing about the Kite Man stuff. And look at how important that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Being. Yeah, I know. That was nuts too. So, like you said, I'm being played.
Yeah, the words fill-in issue and Tom King don't belong in the same sentence, man. Sorry.
I'm gonna just, you know, gonna get played by a critically acclaimed writer. It's fine.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the next book. Damage number one, written by Robert Venditti. V. Diddy, what up? Pencils by Tony Daniel, inks by Danny Mickey, and colors by Tomeo More. Now, before I say anything about this book, can I just say, like, what a murder's row of talent. Robert Venditti is quickly becoming one of my favorite writers. Super, super great guy. Awesome to hang out with. As far as the pencils, the rendering, and layouts, to me, I think this is the best work I've ever seen Tony Daniel do. The art in this book is amazing. Amazing. And, you know, Danny Mickey's super talented. Was part of that critically acclaimed run of Snyder and Capullo on Batman. But to me, and don't get me wrong, I think Capullo's an amazing artist, but I don't necessarily feel like Mickey changed the art that much or elevated it. You know, it was kind of always like good, solid, you know, 7 out of 10 comic art. I feel like Mickey's rendering in this and his textures that he brings to the destruction in this book are amazing. Does a great, great job. And then Tomeo More, like the first time I saw his name was on Wonder Woman, I think. And yeah, again, purplish palette, kind of purplish purples and browns and kind of muted and suits the kind of the destruction that we see throughout the book very well. So, I mean, yeah, incredible job. You know, if I had to pick one of the four books that we're reviewing to say this is, you can only get one, this would be the one I would suggest. It might not be the strongest story-wise, because I think there's a lot to mine both in Brilliant Trash and in Batman 39 and also in Green Lanterns 39, which we'll talk about upcoming. But as far as like cinematic, awesome, great action with a story that's just getting started and has potential to be awesome. Yeah, Damage number one, man. So good. You know, I mentioned it's a bit of an Incredible Hulk, kind of DC's take on the Incredible Hulk, because there's a lot of similarities there. You know, we have this guy who basically turns into a monster, and he's tough to control, and, it's... This transformation is set in motion by the military, and the military are chasing him. So there are some similarities. He's not always the monster. He has trouble controlling the monster. So it's an hour time limit we learn in the story. So that's a little different from the Hulk. But yeah, I just thought, you know, I'd love to see Robert Venditti write the Hulk. And in a way, he kind of is with the story, but it's kind of, you know, refreshed and updated. And I think rather than some rampaging monster that this host person, for lack of a better term, is trying to control, it seems like the guy, I can't remember what his name is, but the guy that's been transformed into the monster, he seems to be there still, but like submerged, and he seems to talk. They like communicate back and forth. So almost like, you know, Ronnie and Professor Stein, like in Firestorm, how they can communicate. So that's an interesting twist. The time limit thing's an interesting twist. We see the Suicide Squad show up at the very end. So that's going to be like some potential for conflict. And then we have this commanding officer that's running this unit. Seems to be a lot of skeletons in the closet there. So, a lot of setup, a lot of moving parts, a lot of plot lines and everything. But the art really, for me, put this book over the top. So really, really amazing. I can't recommend this one enough. And Manny's probably going to say he hates it, but we'll see. What are your thoughts, Manny?
I agree with you that the artwork in that book is fantastic. And I like the take on on his morphing, or whatever you want to call it, to have a time limit to I guess damage things. So that was pretty cool. And I mean, I've gone back and forth on this book just to kind of look at the artwork and not necessarily read it again, but it's an interesting character. With that said, kind of like you said, I really don't care for it. I do see the Hulk in it, and I see the same, pretty much the same basic concept, although I do see the differences, but by the end of it, it didn't grab my attention. As a matter of fact, the fact that they had to call in the Suicide Squad again, just made it that much worse. Can't stand the fact that there's a lot of titles that, that have the Suicide Squad cameos in them. Just recently, I just caught up reading on Red Hood and the Outlaws, and they also have a Suicide Squad cameo. And I don't know, just not my cup of tea. But I mean, it's still a good book for overall. It's not for me.
Ethan Avery is the guy's name, and I think if you don't want to read it, that's cool. You know, whatever. Different strokes, different folks. I'll give you my thoughts after the first trade comes out and see if I think you'll actually have a pretty good idea of things you like and don't like. But I'd be interested to have you at least check out the first trade. If the story lives up to its potential.
Well, I'm still going to read the next few issues. I'm just saying it's just not – because I don't just read one issue and just discredit the book. You have to at least read two or three. I think three minimum to really, you know, get the bearings of the book, because one issue can be a setup issue. It can, you know, just be the very beginning. So can't necessarily judge a book by one issue, but so far I'm not.
What is it about it that you don't like? Just too much like the Hulk?
A little bit, yeah. But I mean, I like the concept. I like the whole idea of, like I said, you know, his rampage having a time limit. I'm interested to see in the second issue how much of the Suicide Squad they added.
So that's really what it is. You dislike it because they're throwing the Suicide Squad in there.
That's the big reason too. Because I mean, it really takes away from the damage, you know, from his main character. It's like, so you're gonna tell me that for a couple of for a couple of panels, you're gonna give me some terrible Amanda Waller. You know, I'm running things crap, especially with the other, the lady with the patch. I don't know her name. They're going to be going back and forth for a couple of panels. They're going to have Harley, you know, with her Harley Quinn banter, and same thing with, Deadshot. So, I mean, that you're going to fill up a quarter to half of the book with just the Suicide Squad. I get the feeling that's going to happen, because that always happens when you add the Suicide Squad in. So we'll see.
I just want to be clear, Suicide Squad is on one page of this book, one panel. I'm just saying.
Yep.
Writing the book off because of...
And then the very last page with the guy back, Ethan Avery, passed out, on the bottom it says Squad Goals. So, gives me the idea, the next issue...
going to
feature the Suicide
Squad. No, we're going to, yeah. I mean, there's no doubt the next issue we're going to get a lot more than one panel, one page of Suicide Squad. And you're right, we'll get Amanda Waller being her, you know, typical dumb, bullheaded self. I agree with you. But I'm not going to say it's a bad issue because of one page. And just for the record, the commanding officer, person in charge of this damage project, her name's Colonel Marie Jonas. And actually, when I first saw her, immediately my thought was, oh, here we go, another female trying to be, you know, hard-ass a la Amanda Waller. So it's interesting that
the Suicide Amanda Waller.
Yeah, that the Suicide Squad does show up on there kind of nose-to-nose doing the stare-down. So, all right, next up we're going to talk about Green Lanterns number 39, written by Tim Seeley. Hey, look at that, two Tim Seeley books in one episode. Art by Ronan Cliquet and colors by Hi-Fi. This is the last story in the arc And I'm curious about your thoughts, Manny. You go first on this one.
I enjoyed the wrap-up of this issue. I liked just kind of the resolve of how it all came together. You know, the one thing that did bug me about this is actually not necessarily the ending of the book, but where they look like they want to pick up going forward. And what I'm talking about is when, I think you and I talked about this, a couple of weeks ago. I think we were talking about, Hal Jordan and the Green Lanterns, how that book was a little bit more, specific to, like space adventurers and things like that, while Green Lanterns with Jessica and Simon had more of a, they were more of the Earth, Earth Lanterns, and they handle a lot of the issues on Earth.
Yeah, that hasn't been the case since Tim Seeley took over. It's been much more of them in space.
Yeah, I know, and that's kind of where I'm just kind of like, you know, I'm not sure if this is what I want them. So that's kind of in the back of my mind. With that said, I like the way that what's her name? Layla, the name of the character. The one who ends up transforming into that all powerful being.
Oh, Lisseth.
I'm sorry?
Lisseth, Lisseth.
Lisseth. She like it's really like a modern take on villainy, I guess you would say. She can't necessarily do anything without having a camera in front of her, having an audience, having people see what she's doing, kind of like in, you know, one of these, I call it like a social media villain. It was cool that ended up being her weakness, and then at the end, it kind of ended up being her downfall, because without that, she probably could have taken out the lanterns and her mother. It just didn't work out that way. By the end of it all, it looks like they were able to patch things up and have both of the races work together to reach one common goal. So, it was a fair ending. And it really, I guess, established their purpose, because they had a couple of issues ago, they had talked about how they weren't sure if they should be there. They weren't sure if it was even their responsibility to intermix with politics, but by the end of this issue, they realized that, you know, their responsibility as lanterns is part of protecting us. Sometimes is to intervene in situations that can get out of hand. And in this case, you know, Simon was kind of duped a little bit by Lisette, but being that there's two of them, they're able to lean on each other and save the day.
Yeah. You think you prefer Sam Humphries writing this book, or do you?
Yeah, definitely. Nothing against Seeley, because there's nothing wrong with cosmic, alien, Green Lantern stories, but I like the fact that they're a little bit more grounded on Earth. I like the fact that Jessica and Simon were able to interact with their families, that they were able to kind of resort back to their comforts of having pancakes together at the diner and things like that. You know, what is the things, being able to interact with the things that really make them who they are as people, as lanterns too. You know how Simon is with his family, and you know, Jessica and her sister. It was done really, I think that it had been done really, really well. So the fact that kind of the tease of the next storyline we have, It seems like they're going to stay in space. I was kind of a little disappointed, but without a doubt, still going to be reading this, because they're two of my favorite characters. The characters themselves, though, Jessica and Simon, I really like the way Seeley has written. It's a setting.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's definitely Sam Humphries definitely had a more kind of insular and introverted kind of setup. You know, I feel like both writers do a good job of characterization and of putting the putting Jessica and Simon in situations where we see who they are as people. You know, we're getting a lot of characterization. I feel like Humphreys did it a little more with emotion and personal relationships. You know, like you mentioned, Jessica's sister and Simon's family, and you know, it had a lot more to do with their feelings. Celie's taken over, and this story, this A World of Our Own. So just to talk a little bit about the story. So there was a planet in the sector that Jessica and Simon are assigned to, which is 2814, same sector Earth is in. It's the same sector that Aben Sur, I was drawing a blank on his name for a second. Aben Sur, the Green Lantern that gave Hal Jordan the ring upon his death, where his planet, Angara, is. And there's another planet, I don't remember the name, but the creatures that live there are called Molites, and they live underground, and their planet was about to explode. And with the help of some Angarians, Jessica and Simon save these indigenous people, these Molites, and they put them on Angara with the blessing of the Angara like leader, and they're there as refugees, and it causes an issue with some this faction called Red Tide, I think they're called, who are isolationists, and they think, you know, keep Angara off Angarans, and we need to be selfish and blah blah blah. And so it's very much a political book. And also there's some parallels between this Green Lantern story and the Brilliant Trash series that from Tim Seeley talked about earlier, especially as it pertains to popularity and social media and you know, needing to be in front of a camera and clickbait articles and all that kind of stuff. There's definitely some parallels, and you know, some parallels with our own, you know, society and the way things are in the world right now. So it's very topical and it's very relevant. And so, as I said, I think Sam Humphreys, in his run on the Green Lantern's title, really showed characterization through personal relationships and emotion. Celie is showing characterization through these political situations and the way Simon and Jessica react to them. Now, I'm not saying I prefer one over the other, but I find it fascinating that you know, Celie followed Humphreys, and the take on it is so different. And part of the reason the book feels so different is, like Manny said, it's a different setting. I mean, it's a Green Lantern book, so I feel in a way it should be in space, but I did enjoy Humphreys, what they were doing on Earth. And of course, the Green Lantern book back in the day with Hal Jordan had plenty of stories that were set on Earth. So, but I don't mind them being in space, as long as they do go home, you know, at some point. I mean, Earth is in their sector as well. But I find it so interesting that they both can tell stories that are good and action-packed and feel like Green Lantern stories. They both can show growth in the characters through, you know, good characterization, but do it in such different ways. You know, one with, you know, emotion and more insular relationships, and the other with the reactions of the situation they're in. It just goes to show the strength of both writers and how there's no one way to tell a good story. So as far as the story in this issue itself, the only little nitpick I had was I felt like Lisseth was like so super powerful, and then all of a sudden Simon goes, "Oh, I just do this and I win and it's over." I was just like, "Oh, well, she seems so powerful and like they were going to have a hard time, and then you just did your thing and meh." So that was just kind of meh for me.
I didn't even realize that she was that he was keeping her alive that way. I didn't know that was something he could do.
Well,
like,
I mean, he.
Oh yeah, like
yeah, he showed that. He's shown that a few times that he could bring people, you know, with I think it's called the Emerald Sight or whatever, or maybe that's when the visions come.
I didn't know he could supposedly do
the impossible, like when he healed his brother-in-law, you know, brought these people back from the brink of death. So it didn't surprise me, and I did remember that was her. So it didn't surprise me. I just thought it was a little like should have been a little tougher, because all of a sudden it was like just the light went on and he just did what he did, and then she, you know, they won basically. But I do agree with you. Like when I look at that last page, that does not excite. And I see the next superhuman trafficking. That's not a story that excites me at all. But it seems silly.
Yeah,
it's, it's Green Lanterns. So I'll keep reading. I mean, this is issue 39. I was going to drop it after like issue 2. Yep. Remember?
Yeah, you were.
Yeah, I just was like, I guess Red Lantern overdosed, and I was going to drop it, but it got better in a big hurry. So, yeah. All right. So those are the specific books that we're going to cover. I am going to do a quick rundown to some other titles that maybe we would have covered had we, you know, had preview copies. So I just want to mention from 451 Media, a friend of the show, David Barron, his story, the trade is coming out. It's called Stained. The trade paperback's coming out $15.99 from, as I said, 451 Media. Jupiter Jet, number 2, from Jason Inman and Ashley V. Robinson. The second issue comes out from Action Labs. First issue was great, so definitely encourage you to check that one out. I mentioned Brilliant Trash already. From Boom, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers number 23. If you kind of want to get on board to see what leads up to that big event, what is it called? Let me check it real fast. By Kyle Higgins. I have my previews right here. And we just talked about it, man. You remember what it's called? Shattered Grid. Yeah, Shattered Grid, which starts in Mighty Morphin Power Rangers 25. So if you want to get a jump start on that. From DC, we talked about quite a few DC books already, but I'll also mention Green Arrow 39. No, not Green Arrow. Green Arrow Volume 9. That's been a really, really great title. So I will mention that. From Image, Ice Cream Man number 1, which seems to be some really strange, maybe anthology kind of thing. I really keep reading the solicit. People have been talking about it. I'm not sure what it's all
about. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm not going to pick it up, but I know a lot of people are going to be talking about it. From Marvel, Amazing Spider-Man 792. Counting down to 800, which is going to be a big milestone. And then obviously the Avengers No Surrender weekly story continues with number 676. Star Wars is up to number 42. And for those of you Robotech fans, Titan Publishing Group has Robotech number 6, which I think they've restarted that book almost as many times as Marvel has restarted their entire line. So those are a few of the books you can find at your local comic shop. So just make sure you get out there and check out what's on the stands. So once again, I want to thank everyone for joining us. Please visit us at thecomicsourceblog.com for all past episodes of the podcast. You can also find links to our YouTube channel there or check out our famous sketch gallery. Be sure you're following us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Also do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to keep up to date with all our latest episodes and convention coverage. And don't forget, we still have our exclusive podcast in partnership with LRM Online, the 9-panel grid that comes out every Tuesday. And we'll be migrating just about all the Comic Source content over to LRM Online, still under the Comic Source banner, but we're just teaming up with them. It just makes sense for us to handle all their comic coverage going forward. So be sure you're tuning in and following us on social media so you know when that switch happens. So once again, thanks for joining us, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.